the crowd on its feet. They are absolutely silent.
Wow, harder than I thought. Racing and talking at the same time.
Welcome to World of Motorcycling, covering rider culture and the motorcycle industry with John Davis, Walt Fletcher, and Steve, the producer, Johan.
Welcome, everyone, to another hour of World of Motorcycling. I'm Walt with my co-hosts, John and Steve. We've got a great show lined up for you. We always start this segment off with Inside the Helmet, where we do a ride-by overview of what's happening in the motorcycling industry. And one thing, we have the final statement on Facebook by the where the road ends.
But it is
could
at
be
the
where the world ends. You never
yes,
know.
Where the world
That's
ends.
Right.
Yes. So it says, this week we had an anticlimactic finish in Ushuaia, Argentina. Now after braving the Dalton Highway in Alaska, crossing the Darien Gap, which was no trivial evolution, let me assure you, and completing 18,571 miles, everyone's ready to go home. We would like to
no
thank
doubt.
Our primary sponsor, Gerber Gear, for making this possible. Without their support, we truly could not have done it. We would also like to thank Revit, Dunlop Motorcycle Tires, Quicksilver Products, Moto Skivis, and let me tell you, if you're going to ride that much, Moto Skivis, you want it.
Yeah.
Oh,
this
yeah.
is
Those
this
things
is
are awesome.
Kind of like the padded things that bicyclists wear. CVT Cascadia Vehicle Tents, Rocky Mountain Kawasaki, all of whom provided generous support and awesome equipment to keep us alive over the past 5 months. Now we're shifting the focus to post-production so we can finish the film and get it distributed as soon as possible. Right now we're shooting for a 2019 release. In the meantime, we'll continue to put out short videos, photos, and updates on the film release. And once again, if you really want to see all this, you just go to Where the Road Ends on Facebook, and they have all kinds of things about it. You can get... if you go to Halio Lifestyle Athletica, you can actually get a T-shirt from Where the Road Ends. But
we're going to have them on.
We're going to put out the word. I've sent them a thing on Facebook asking them, and I haven't heard anything yet.
Well, I don't think they're going to be communicating with anybody until they're back home.
Yeah.
They are most likely just trying to renegotiate life and get back, and when their vehicles get shipped home and all that, then they can take a big breather, and then they'll get I'll bet you there's a lot of people who are going to want to interview them magazines and media. Well, I came across this, that Florida is the latest state to reclassify its driving requirements, the big slingshot, an auto cycle. They're calling it an auto cycle. Florida becomes the 43rd state to reclassify its driving requirements. Estate residents can now operate a slingshot with a valid state driver's license rather than a previous required motorcycle endorsement. Driving requirements for Florida will officially transition to the auto cycle on July 1st, 2018. So that's really cool. If you don't ride, ride motorcycles, don't have an endorsement, but you want to have one of these slingshots, then by all means, you can get one and not worry about it.
Yep.
And
well, I don't know.
Well,
where
the first
it came
thing you
in.
Can do is take it down to the dealer to have the recall taken care of on the brakes and the seat belts for those things.
Yeah.
Oh, you saw that recall, right, John?
Yeah, the 2015 to 2018
slingshots. I don't know where
slingshots.
This falls in, but Mississippi did it too. It says Mississippi is the 43rd state in the U.S. where all you need to drive a slingshot is a regular driver's license.
Do you think that's a good idea?
Having test driven one, I'm not sure. It does not behave like a motorcycle, so
no.
I don't think you need to have a motorcycle license. Really.
They have to. Do they wear helmets though?
Well, that's the big reason people wanted to get it off was so you didn't have to wear a helmet.
Yeah.
They say that the frame and there's a big roll cage behind them that even if you didn't have a helmet, if the thing rolled, you'd be fine. The problem is, of course, you're going down the road, and who knows what's going to be. But then again, same thing with a convertible.
It's not much more. I wanted to take a picture. I didn't even think about it. I was in my car, my van, heading home, and I came up to the top of the street up here at 168. And there was the cutest little teeny, I don't know, it was a Fiat or Toyota or something. And I was kind of, it had... Anyway, so it was this little teeny round car, and it was from the 60s, and it reminded me of MG, but it was a different, and it was an Asian guy, an older guy, driving it, and I thought, and he was on the right-hand side, so I think it came from Japan, and I really, I've never seen one like this, and I thought, that thing is so small, it's the size of a slingshot, so you have cars already on the streets, like the little MGs and Triumphs from back in the day. They were darn near about the same size as the thing. They have four wheels versus three.
Yeah.
I remember that I could park my MG Roadster many places that everybody else, I mean, parallel park it.
That's right.
Many places that people could not.
Somebody rolls out with his Harley and you just back right in.
That's it. That's it.
I'll
almost.
Take that spot. Thank you very much.
You know, I was slightly longer than a motorcycle, but I was still short enough that even if somebody was way back on one and way forward on another, and I didn't have much of a slot, I could get in it because it was really short.
Well, and speaking of Polaris products, big news for Polaris today. Polaris Industries announced a $27.25 million settlement with Consumer Product Safety Commission that resolves two 2016 late reporting claims. Additionally, Polaris, in partnership with CPSC, initiated a recall select on RZR XP/XP4 1000 models. Polaris had previously accrued for these items, as such as the company's current full year 2018 earning. And with that in mind, they have they had to recall the 2014-2018 RZR XP1000 in its 107,000 units.
Jeez.
If the exhaust silencer fatigues and cracks, the heat shield may not manage heat, which may lead to melting of nearby components or fire. You got to remember a lot of plastic on these rigs.
Yeah.
And when you put plastic next to hot mufflers and or something like that, you can start melting and cause fires. And they've had fires. So the rollout of this announcement, I think, is in part of the fact that, hey, you guys, you just signed, but you also have to pull back the other number of recalls. So that's,
man. Pull all those slingshots back in. Well, and Polaris is in good company since we're talking recalls. Harley's got a calling back 250,000 bikes for faulty brakes, so.
And some saddlebag issues, too.
Yeah, that's right. The detachable saddlebags are under recall as well.
They're not ones that come with standard bikes. They come with... Hang on. We'll be right back with more of World of Motorcycles.
Hey everyone, Steve Johan here, producer of the World of Motorcycling show. If you have any interest in what's happening in the automotive world, then I invite you to listen to a really cool show called Horsepower Chrome and Rust, where we cover car culture and the automotive industry. Horsepower Chrome and Rust is a fast-paced weekly podcast featuring Shane Osborne, Brady Wright, and me, Steve Johan. You can hear the show at horsepowerchromeandrust.podomatic.com. where we'll be waiting for you.
What are all the things you witness online in a day? Cats playing piano, selfies on your feed, your friend's picture being turned into a nasty meme that's been shared 50 times, 51, 52. When someone's being bullied online, it's hard to know what to do. Now you can speak up with the witness emoji. It looks like an eye in a speech bubble, and it's in the symbol section near the clocks in your phone. You'll let the world know it isn't cool, and you'll let your friend know you care. Learn more at eyewitnessbullying.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Do you suffer from gastrointestinal anguish after eating spicy foods at your local Mexican restaurant? Do you suffer outrageous amounts of flatulence after eating greasy foods at your local fast food joint? Do you suffer from acid reflux after ingesting copious amounts of alcoholic beverages at your local drinking hole? Then call the law offices of Ambulance and Chaser at 1-800-782-5377. Where we have helped thousands of so-called victims just like yourself. If you call us today at 1-800-782-5377, we'll make sure to send you out our free guide, The Top 20 Medical Issues Most Likely to Be Sued Over. But act today, because the longer you wait, the less chance you have to win your case. Remember, you don't have to suffer any longer. Instead, call us at 1-800-782-5377. The Law Offices of Ambulance and Chaser, making the most out of your misery. Please be advised, a law firm of Ambience & Chaser is not licensed to practice law in all 50 states and may be called into question by the federal government for questionable practices, but hey, that's okay. You knew that already, didn't you? You greedy sucker.
Welcome back to the second segment of World of Motorcycling. Walt, Steve, and John here. For more about the show, please visit us at www.worldofmotorcycling.com. We'd like to start this section off with Behind the Bars, where we spend some time covering cool stuff, trends, new bikes, people, and more.
Well, what do you got, John? Have you found some really cool stuff?
Well, we got some updates on racing news. MotoGP Round 2, that's the round in Argentina, will take place on Sunday. I believe it's being broadcast on BN Sports, B-E-I-N Sports, if that's available on your local cable provider. And then Saturday, we've got the Harley-Davidson Atlanta Short Track presented by Hellbender Harley-Davidson. That's the American Flat Track Round 2. That's available for streaming on fanschoice.tv at 2 o'clock Eastern Time. So that's some really exciting racing. If you haven't watched some American Flat Track, check it out. It's pretty exciting stuff.
Yeah, it is. I think I have not watched any other than just little bits of older footage, so I'm going to have to locate and start watching some of this. I don't have cable, so that's one thing. If they've got it on demand someplace.
Well, you can stream the Flat Track on fanschoice.tv. You can stream it there for free.
Fanschoice.tv.
Yep.
I'm going to go there. I'll want to look at that. That'll be great because then I can watch it on my the internet. And speaking of racing, Ducati, celebrating the 25th anniversary of the Monster, hosted the largest Ducati Monster parade ever, organized in France by Ducati West Europe as part of the Sunday Ride Classic Motorcycling Festival. The parade saw the participation of a huge number of Monsters of every type, year, and model from all over Europe. From the first Monster 900 built in 1993 to the very latest 821 made in 2018, no less than 517 Monster motorcycles swarmed onto the Paul Ricard circuit at La Castellette, creating a gigantic colorful convoy of bikes that established a new record. And I think that's great. I mean, when you can get...
That was probably quite the sound to behold.
Oh,
all
yeah.
Those monsters.
They have a very unique sound. Harleys have a unique sound.
Yep. Ducatis have a unique sound.
Yes, they do. And I'm sure a lot of them had some extra performance gear on there to just...
Yep.
So
we got some new bikes coming at us in 2019. Honda's announced that they're going to bring the CB300R to the U.S. in 2019. So that's pretty exciting. That's a nice little bike.
Oh, that's a great entry-level bike.
Yeah, great entry-level bike. They've also updated their PCX 150 scooter for 2019. And then the rumor mill is cranking because Suzuki has registered the Katana name again. So that'll be interesting. The Katana, the Suzuki Katanas were some pretty amazing machines back in the day. So I'm hoping they've got something special to live up to the legend of that name.
Now, I am trying to scratch my brain, and I can't because I can only scratch my skull. Remind us what the Katana was.
So the Katana was a sport bike. Trying to look and see when they were produced, but I remember that they were kind of they were an alternative to the GSXR line back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
They were a sport bike, and Katana is it's a type of Japanese samurai sword, if I remember correctly. So anyway, they were a very high performance machine. Not sure they've registered the name again, but they haven't really announced what their plans are. So we're not sure what it's going to be, but I'm going to guess it's going to be something sporty.
Well, you know, I wonder if this has something to do with the kickback that we've seen so much praise of the new Kawasaki KZ900. All the reviews have been in that everybody just loves this thing. It's a retro-styled motorcycle with today's technology. And I was reading over there was an article by Marlon Slack, and he says, the reviews are in, the motorcycle industry has spoken. The new Kawasaki Z900 RS is the best handling, best looking, most incredible retro bike ever designed, according to the throngs of fawning middle-aged journalists. Well, yeah. I've had and then guess what? He says, but I've had 10 days to figure out the Z900RS is worthy of even half the praise that's been heaped on it. Well, of all things, I'm blown away. And I may be down, put me down as a fan and soon potential owner. So he spent 10 days, you know, on the interstate, back streets, all over the place. And it's just a reminder, sometimes simplicity and finesse paired with modern technology can often win the hearts and minds of people, because it's a more basic looking, you can ride it upright, you don't have to crouch over like a true sport bike. But if you want to crouch over, you've got all the oomph in the world you ever want. And it rides very nicely. I've seen some of the older ones at some of the vintage motorcycle shows and thought, you know, this is the kind of bike I would like to have.
When I'm teaching down in Everett on the weekends, we hold our classroom sessions Saturday afternoon at Everett Power Sports, and they have a 2017 Honda CB1100.
Yes.
That's on the floor there, and it is all black. It's blacked out. The engine covers are all gloss black, and I mean, it's an inline four. It looks like it rolled straight out of, you know, 1984.
Yes.
It's like every time I am in that store, I walk around that bike and just go, oh, I would so love to take that home.
That's the other one. When we were at the last show, when Walt and I were at the last show at IMS a couple years ago, when they had it, they had one of those.
Right.
And I sat on it and I said, this is just like, darn near like the 900 that I last rode before I gave up riding. It was, I'm like, this is the KZ, this is the style of bike I would fall in love with again. I would want to have one of those because it's got all the oomph. I mean, the KZ's got 110 horsepower and plenty of torque, and I'm sure the Honda's right in there with that. And but they got that styling right out of the 80s that I really like. But it's got the modern technology.
So it's what we used to call a UJM, the Universal Japanese Motorcycle.
Yeah, and you know, and Walt may be a Harley fan, but part of the reason is it stayed the same. It hasn't, they haven't morphed, and he likes that original,
right?
That original style. So for us, for me, who grew up in the 70s and liked that original metric style, I liked it. I didn't want the super high end. I want it to look like what I remember, and it was more manageable for me to ride. And so we have the same idea that we want that basic universal looking bike that when you look at it, you go, that's a motorcycle.
That's what I've always said. When we went to the international motorcycle shows, I always used to go around and I would look at the metrics and the cruisers that the metrics had. Mm-hmm. And with the exception of Kawasaki, I must say Kawasaki has a great deal of originality. The other ones, every one, you would say, that's a knockoff Softail, that's a knockoff Dyna, that's a knockoff this, that's a knockoff that. Whatever. The only ones that really nobody ever knocked off was the Sportster. They kind of looked like it. They were in the same size, but it wasn't that high weight sport, you know, mode machine that a Sportster actually is. But, you know, that, and it's like you say, if you're going to be a cruiser, you want to look like pretty
now,
much.
Now,
like
John's got a Honda, and it actually looks really nice. That thing's long.
Thank you.
I mean, your bike, I was looking at it. It's all clean. You had it all spiffed up, ready for your ride. And I went, man, that doesn't look that old. And it looks, and it's all polished and looked great. And I went, that thing's as long as Walt's bike. I mean, that thing's huge.
In terms of looks, it looks like it would fit right in with a Harley.
It does. It's built. You know? It's got the pipes coming down, the way it's configured.
Yep.
And so you can find pretty much anything you want out there. And we're going to bring our guest on here in the next segment, Mike Vaughn. And he's going to talk to us a little bit about some of the things going on in the industry. But one of them we will talk about is the sales are down, but there's more bikes than ever to choose from.
Right.
The sense of more people coming in, even. He said there's more manufacturers entering into the market than ever before. It's kind of returning. Yeah. And so we'll cover a little bit of that. The other thing I noticed is iMotorsports, one of the largest pre-owned motorcycle retailers in the United States, announced the launch of Route 66 Indian Motorcycle. Chicago area motorcycle enthusiasts now have the opportunity to see, experience, and buy Indian motorcycles at iMotorsports headquarters in Elmhurst, Illinois. As the addition of the Indian Motorcycle line at iHurst location follows the successful acquisition operation of two authorized Indian dealerships in Florida. So they are on a buying spree, and I've never heard of iMotorsports, but I'm going to look them up. But again, what we have seen in the past several years is a lot of groups are really coming on strong, whether it's from dealer side or someone who knows how to handle motorcycling, and they've come in and they've bought out a number of what I would call former baby boomer owners that are ready to retire.
Yep.
And these guys come in. I mean, we saw that locally here. We've had, I think we have one owner now that owns, they own both. They own a BMW, they own a couple Ducati, and they own a multiplex down in the South End. You know who I'm talking about there, John?
A multiplex in the South End?
Yeah, they took up one of the Honda slash down there.
Are you thinking of like Renton Motorsports or?
Yeah, I can't remember who it is, but it's the guy that owns, who took over BMW West.
No, I'm sorry. I don't
Ride West BMW, the one that Dave Swayze used to work at. So he's a Microsofty, and he bought up about three or four dealerships. Yeah. So interesting how this happens. People come from one segment of the world, and they got some money, and they get going, and they get really passionate. And next thing you know,
it's something that they enjoy, and so they figure they'll get into it.
Well, that's probably it. And speaking of enjoying, we're getting closer to our break, and another thing I noticed here. Oh, yeah. Royal Enfield, one-day ride. Royal Enfield North America invites enthusiasts nationwide to participate in the 8th Annual One Ride on April 8th. Celebrating the passion for motorcycles and riding, One Ride will be taking place in 9 major cities across the country. Those interested in joining a local ride or hosting a ride can visit royalenfield.com/one ride for more information. It is the largest, One Ride is largest motorcycle community ride across the world. The theme for this year's ride is Ride as One, which aligns with Royal Enfield's global philosophy of promoting exploration and camaraderie among the leisure crowd. So, again, Royal Enfield is working hard to make inroads here in the United States. They offer a really nice product at a really good price point, and we're going to see more of them, I know, in the future. So hang on, guys. We're going to be right back with more of the show and our great guest, Mike Vaughn.
When you want the latest news and information related to the Canadian motorcycling scene, then turn to BeltDriveBetty.com, your trusted source for all things motorcycling. BeltDriveBetty.com, serving the Canadian motorcycling scene since 2003.
Hi, I'm Danica Patrick. Watching my nieces grow, play, and learn is amazing, but not every child gets to be carefree. 1 in 6 kids in the U.S. are hungry. This breaks my heart, and it's something that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and gives it to families in need. To help, visit feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Hey, all you guys and gals. The next time you're hankering for a trip down memory lane, we recommend a visit to our Older Than the Hill Chateau de Smell Resort in Boondocks, Idaho, where the rooms smell like week-old cigarette smoke and month-old beer. Every weekend during the summer months, we feature our Old Maid Punker Run, Gooder Trash Clam Bake, and Big Ted's Keg Toss. And don't forget our complimentary Bloody Mary morning appetizers to chase away those late-night reveries. Sure enough, when you want to travel back and enjoy those old biker smell, then come to stay at Chateau de Smell, where our two mascots, Pit and Bull, will greet you at the gate and where we never leave the lights on. Because, hey, after all, we're going green. Chateau de Smell, because nothing beats the old days of smoky bars, stale beer, and crap on the carpet than a visit to Chateau de Smell. And for those who don't know how to spell Chateau de Smell, that's okay. We made it easy for you. It's smellit.com.
When you want the latest news and information related to the Canadian motorcycling scene, then turn to BeltDriveBetty.com, your trusted source for all things motorcycling. BeltDriveBetty.com, serving the Canadian motorcycling scene since 2003.
And you could crack a chrome crown nut, make a hardtail go soft.
Welcome back to the third segment of the show, also known as Candid Conversations. This is where we interview the movers, the shakers, the pioneers, the speed freaks, the customizers, the rebels, and industry siders within the world of motorcycling. And tonight's guest is a longtime friend of ours. His name is Mike Vaughn. He's a moto journalist, industry insider, been around the world of motorcycling and publications and working for motorcycle companies and such for quite some time, and he's located it down in beautiful, beautiful Oceanside, is it not?
Yes, Oceanside, California.
Yep, right there in that San Diego place. I've been to Oceanside. It is wonderful. If you head directly east, you're going to go to Temecula. So he's got like beautiful, beautiful country to ride in there. So the ocean and the wine country.
And they've got a world mark in both of those places, Temecula and Oceanside.
So. Oh.
So I know you. Get whoever it is you borrow those credits from and get down there. Because I was at Oceanside when Jeremiah got married. And
okay.
I loved it.
Well, Mike, we got you on to kind of chat a little bit about what's going on in the industry, because you have your ear firmly planted into the ground and listening to what's going on. And we thought we'd kind of chat a little bit about some of the trends going on. And one of the first things we wanted to chat about was you mentioned to me when we were talking yesterday, and I didn't realize this. I don't know if any of us here realize this, but the overall sales in the United States was down. What did you say it was?
It was down 11% from last year. I don't know what the exact number is. I just saw the percentage, and it's quite a bit, actually.
Now, was that now? How did that compare to the year before?
Well, it was down 11% from the year before. I don't remember actually, but sales were down 2%. I think previous year.
Right.
So it's declined at least 2 years in a row. I think probably three, actually. But this is the biggest downward jump that the market has taken.
And we were kind of discussing some of the things. Have you kind of been discussing with all your fellow motorheads down there what has been the cause of this?
Well, there are a lot of opinions, and I don't know. I guess they're all valid if you can't disprove them. But, you know, some people say it's Generation X and millennials who really have other things to do than to ride motorcycles. And as we discussed the other day, you know, a lot of it has to do with the economics of younger people who would normally be buying motorcycles. I can remember back in the 60s, the early 60s, late 50s, you could buy a motorcycle that was acceptable for $300, and you could make that easily in your summer job while you were going to school. And, you know, I suppose it could be done now, but it'd be a lot more difficult, you know. So I think that's part of the equation. One thing I saw the other day that was kind of intriguing is that 40%, I think, of millennials are Asian, Black, or Hispanic. And I don't know if that requires a separate approach to your marketing or not, but I don't think anybody's recognized that fact, nor are they making any effort, as far as I know, to address the different needs of what that market might have.
Wow, I didn't even know that. But I can tell you that I live in a school district that has 30-some plus, I think it's like 37 dialects, nationalities represented in our little town of Linwood. And My middle son, he's the only Caucasian amongst his friends. And,
oh, wow.
And he's got quite a few group of, I mean, he's got a lot of friends, but his best friends, there's about five or six other ones, and they're all from different various backgrounds. I mean, they're parent. I mean, they're born here, but the fact is, you're right. There are different interests, and different people groups have a different way of looking at life. And I even thought about that. That's just, I'll have to ponder that.
Well, I hadn't either until this. I've read the article, so I can't say I have any particular insight. I just croaking out something I read a couple months ago. So, but I think that's an issue. You know, 50 years ago when I started writing, it was a lot more homogeneous culture. It's not anymore.
No, and so. And we had talked that when I bought my first bike, it was in 1980, and it was like the peak of registrations, mm-hmm. and then the next year went down, and following that, and you told me,
right.
And I didn't realize this, but you told me a very interesting, there was a couple things that kind of quelched. What were those two things that really kind of took place there?
Well, two things that come immediately to mind is as superbikes developed, the insurance rates went through the roof. I talked to a dealer one time who was trying to sell a ZX10, and the insurance on it was $10,000. That's what his customers quoted, which, you know, kind of put it out of reach.
That's insane.
And the other factor was there was no financing. You know?
Yeah.
The finance companies hadn't. They were providing floor planning. They were providing finance for the dealer, but it really hadn't trickled down to consumers. If you wanted to buy a motorcycle, you had to go out and find somebody who would finance you. I remember I bought a motorcycle one time using, I don't know if they're even around, FHA or FHC or something like that.
Yep.
And it was, I mean, the interest charges were ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
I bought my first one. I got it through the bank. And what I did is I was 20 years old. I hadn't established any credit. But I had money, so what I did is I think I got like a $1,500 worth of CDs, and then because I had $1,500 worth of CDs in the bank, I went and got a loan for $1,200, and they had collateral that was my CDs, and therefore I was able to make payments on a used bike for $1,200, get a little 650 Yamaha used. And that's how I bought my first one. So I used the, you know, and then I established credit that way. But that was basically the way I did it, but I did through a regular bank. I didn't go through the dealer to buy anything. I went through the bank. And I'll tell you what, though, that CD was making, 13% return. So I think my interest rate
were the days.
Well, my interest rate was probably like 18%, and I had to make a 5% difference because I was getting 13 and I was paying out 18. But nonetheless, if you were just going out to get a loan at 18%, which is what it was in 1980, people forget that. The homeowner loans were up to 13-14%. It was outrageous. So
I think you're out to 18 down here.
Yes, it was. Yes.
Yeah. Yep.
Now, we haven't had interest rates like that, and you can get financing anywhere you want today with anything. So
well, that's why it started with the car companies and then moved to like dealers, motorcycle dealers and so on like that. But they began opening their own little banks and financing their own products because nobody else wanted to. They wanted to have this outrageous interest rates. And so they said, no, we'll do this because we're making our money selling the cars and selling the bikes. And so we'll, you know, make less money on the interest, but, you know.
Well, another thing that we noticed is that everybody's like, well, remember the golden years of the 90s? Yeah, Mike and I, you were right. What was the main thing that people kind of forget about the 90s that caused the big baby boomer boom on buying Harleys and big bikes?
cheap credit.
Yeah, for the latter part of the 90s, early 2000s, was the equity that boomers had built up in their houses and the rapidly rising price of real estate. You know, so all of a sudden you had a house that you maybe bought for $70,000 that all of a sudden was worth twice that.
Yep.
And a lot of people looked at that like a bank and borrowed money against their house because hopefully by that time the interest rates had dropped somewhat, and so it gave them basically free money, and they spent it.
They did.
The Harleys with it. Yeah, Harley was like selling 500,000 bikes a year, I think, something like that.
Yeah, and it was all based on what people perceived that they had.
Exactly.
And then when the crash hit, a lot of people got caught up because now they had double mortgage.
Yep.
Yeah, that's right.
And now everything's corrected, and people are going, oh, we can't do that again. I can't afford
it.
I lost my house. I can't afford to go do that again.
Yep.
And those of us who never do that in the first place wouldn't do it anyway. So, you know, but that was a big boom and everybody did it because it was like this.
Oh, yeah.
So that was kind of an artificial thing. And in reality, I don't think we'll ever see that again unless people get kind of knocked on the side of the head. The newer generation can't afford to get into a house a lot of times. And they're
ridiculous.
It is. So you've got over 300 million people now in the United States. I think you said that when you bought your bike, it was like 150 million or something like that.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's a huge difference.
Yeah.
It was pretty vacant. You
know? Yeah. It's a lot of open space.
Yeah.
Well, remember,
then you had the big dirt bike boom during the 60s and, or, you know, 70s. And that was one of the reasons why there was plenty of open land.
Yeah.
You could just basically drive out of your, if you lived in the burbs, you could drive out of your backyard and find a place to ride your bike.
Yep.
We did. Our neighborhood was right on the borderline of farmland and woods, and everybody that could afford one had one, and they all had trail bikes, or I ride my pedal bike, and we had trails everywhere. And you spent all day, every day, when you weren't in school or all summer, you'd be up there in the trails.
Sure.
And you had that everywhere all across the United States.
Yeah, and bikes were cheap. They're all those two strokes in Japan, and you know they didn't cost a fortune. You know,
paper route money. My buddies bought their. A couple of them had a Suzuki 100s. A couple of them had a Suzuki 125s. One was the red, was 125. The other ones are yellow, and I talked to my friend later on in life. I said, "Well, how did you afford that?" And he says, "My dad bought it, and I paid him back. I used my paper route money." I went. And then my other friend said, yeah, I did the same thing. And I went, I was saving for one, too. And then I saved longer and just bought a car with that money. So, because I got
to,
you know, and so you could make money, right, even in a paper route and buy a motorcycle.
Yeah.
Yep. Mike's son couldn't even get a paper route. There's paper routes don't exist anymore.
Yeah, that's right. A guy comes by every morning and throws a couple of papers at me from his car. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Some have them, but they're adults mostly.
And you got to remember when I was in high school, and I was making $1.85 in 77. So it wasn't like we were making big bucks back in the early 70s as kids. It's just your money could go a lot further because inflation hadn't taken over. That $300-$400 for that motorcycle, you could earn that with a lot of stuff. So.
They had a thing on Facebook where they were asking, what is the lowest that you ever saw gas prices? And there were people who were talking about nickel a gallon and so on. And all of the, of course, people from today are going, you're a liar, you're nuts. And it's like, no, I don't remember a nickel, but I remember a dime. I remember 10 cents. I've got pictures of me working at a gas station selling gas for 15 cents a gallon.
I was in the 40s. It was 40s in the 40 cents in the 70s.
Right. Well, mine was like in the 60s. It was the early 60s and so on. It was like 15 to a quarter. And And then, I like you say, I got in the service, went overseas, and when I went overseas, it was 50 cents a gallon. We thought it was terrible. And when I came back, it was a dollar and quarter, and we're going, what the heck?
Yeah, everything changed. Know? That was the big thing. And so I wanted to, you know, we're going to run out of time, so guys, would be all right if we hold Mike over for a little bit into the next segment?
Sure.
I don't mind.
Okay. So before we end off this, I wanted to ask you, what's the trend? Well, I'm going to post this and have you think about it, but one of the trends we've been tracking here is that a lot of the old line dealership owners, what I classify the baby boomers, are in their late 60s, mid-60s, and or a little older, family-owned. They are now turning, they want to retire, and they're selling off their dealerships. And the new crop of buyers that are coming in to buy the dealerships tend to be either outside of the industry people, like up here we have some Microsoft rich people, and or car dealer oriented type conglomerates where they own multiple car dealerships, and now they're adding motorcycles to their line of business. So I want you to think about that. We're going to bring you right back on the other side. And so stick with us, folks. We got Mike Vaughn on the other side, and we got a lot more. So hang on. We've got trivias tonight, too.
I saw the road ahead. It was a long and winding trail. I saw a chance to lead.
Hey, everyone. Steve Johann here, producer of the World of Motorcycling show. If you have any interest in what's happening in the automotive world, then I invite you to listen to a really cool show called Horsepower Chrome and Rust, where we cover car culture and the automotive industry. Horsepower Chrome and Rust is a fast-paced weekly podcast featuring Shane Osborne, Brady Wright, and me, Steve Johann. You can hear the show at horsepowerchromeandrust.podomatic.com, where we'll be waiting for you.
Hi, I'm Danica Patrick. Watching my nieces grow, play, and learn is amazing, but not every child gets to be carefree. 1 in 6 kids in the U.S. are hungry. This breaks my heart, and it's something that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and gives it to families in need. To help, visit feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Do you suffer from gastrointestinal anguish after eating spicy foods at your local Mexican restaurant? Do you suffer outrageous amounts of flatulence after eating greasy foods at your local fast food joint? Do you suffer from acid reflux after ingesting copious amounts of alcoholic beverages at your local drinking hole? Then call the law offices of Ambulance and Chaser at 1-800-782-5377, where we've helped thousands of so-called victims just like yourself. If you call us today at 1-800-782-5377, we'll make sure to send you out our free guide, The Top 20 Medical Issues Most Likely to Be Sued Over. But act today, because the longer you wait, the less chance you have to win your case. Remember, you don't have to suffer any longer. Instead, call us at 1-800-782-5377. The Law Offices of Ambulance and Chaser, making the most out of your misery. Please be advised, the law firm of Ambulance and Chaser is not licensed to practice law in all 50 states and may be called into question by the federal government for questionable practices, but hey, that's okay. You knew that already, didn't you? You greedy sucker.
Welcome back to the fourth segment of our show. Make sure to visit our blog at www.worldofmotorcycling.com and use the contact form to send us your email. Now, normally this would be the Between the Lines where we share a weekly safety tip, but we're finishing up right now with Mike, and then we'll do Between the Lines in a bit.
Yeah, so Mike, I wanted you to ponder that question about the dealership. So what have you been noticing? Have you seen this?
Well, actually, this started some time ago, towards the end of the 90s, and it was mostly people forming clumps, I don't know how else to refer to it, but buying several dealerships, and many of the owners were not in the business primarily, but they'd buy two or three or four or more dealerships, and I guess, you know, try to run them universally and actually try to run them like automobile franchises, which they did, and which was where a lot of these guys came from. So I don't know. I don't know if it's such a good deal anymore. It's there's not a lot of margin in motorcycles, and you got to do a lot of fancy footwork to make it profitable for yourself. How green that Apple still is, you know.
Well, and that's one thing we have discovered is the markups on motorcycles, very little. And it, they only they make their the money on service and gear, and with the advent of online purchasing, you can get steep discounts on a lot of the gear now. So it really comes down to how well are they serving you is in the service department, and then adding the goodies and stuff like that.
Well, that's one of the things that Harley did was Harley will not sell you from their website. If you decide that you want to buy something over the internet, they'll ask you what your zip code is, and they'll put you on the website of the nearest Harley dealership so they can make the money.
Right.
And
well, the thing is that's a federal law. You can't sell a vehicle, a new vehicle, from anything other than an authorized dealer. I know there was a lot of excitement about that, and maybe some of the small Chinese brands are doing that, but it's against the law, basically.
Well,
it's got to be sold to the dealer. Yeah.
It's really strange. It's, if you are a resident of California, no matter where you buy the motor, well, if you are a resident of California, you must buy the bike in California, period. Cannot
Is that
buy
right, Mike?
Else.
You live there.
Yeah, I've lived here, and I've been gone twice since I lived here. But I didn't buy any new motorcycles while I was gone.
We're not allowed to. We are not allowed to sell Harleys to anybody from California. They have to go back to California and buy them. That's by
the
CARB.
Is that because
of
the 49-state thing, and California's got a different set of EPA regs?
That's correct. But now,
okay.
I could buy, well, I did, I own a Harley. I could drive my Harley to California, take up residence, and there's not a thing they can say to me.
Right, but brand new. But a brand new one, you have to buy their...
No, if I was a resident, I would. Right now, I could take mine, get a brand new motorcycle, and move to California, and they can't say a word.
Right.
Because when I bought it, I was a resident of Washington.
Well, that's normal,
but
too.
That's, once again, that's what Mike's saying, is there's all of these freaking regs that are strange. Some of them are local, some of them are state, some of them are federal. And so they basically said, nothing over the internet, guys. You got to be looking at somebody in the eye who knows something and won't screw this up.
Well, yeah, there's a huge liability issue, and that's primarily the reason they won't sell. An OE, a legitimate OE, will not sell you a bike over the internet. He wants the dealer has to check off a checklist that he's gone through this thing and have it available for the OE to see when he asks for it. So, actually, if you bring a bike into California, because I've done this, it's got to have a minimum of 7,500 miles on it.
Right.
Oh. Yeah. Well, speaking of a minimum, we have run out of our time for you right now, Mike. So.
Okay.
Thanks so much for being on with us. And do you have anywhere for people to follow you?
No, I retired a couple of years ago.
That's what I thought.
I'm lowering my profile.
Well, we'll keep you on the show once in a while with us.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Sounds okay to me.
Hey, thanks for coming on with us, Mike, and you have a wonderful night.
Thank you very much. You guys have a good one, too.
You
Talk
too.
To
you Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, John, what's the safety tip of the week?
Well, it's it was inspired by something that I read recently that talked about it seems that frequently we have a tendency to crash our motorcycles after we've made a change of some kind.
Yes.
And so, you know, we crash when something changes and we don't take the time to adjust to that change. So it's just to, you know, whether you're making an adjustment in your bars, or you've changed your tires, or any kind of adjustment or modification to your motorcycle, you want to take some time and get used to it and see how it's affected the way your motorcycle feels and how it handles. It could be anything, new brake pads, new compound of tires that somebody wanted you to try, could be somebody else's bike. Could be all sorts of things. And Eddie Lawson, who was a four-time world champion racer, talked about how he would take two slow laps at the beginning of every weekend just to make sure that everything was good before he really turned it up. So that's my tip, is whenever you do some work on your bike, whenever you make a change, no matter how trivial it seems, make that first ride a cautious one.
Yep, that's probably a corollary to the idea that they said that if you get a new bike, even if it's identical or theoretically identical to what you just had, that for at least a month, you almost double your chance of having some type of an incident. Yep. And it's just because no two bikes are alike, even if they're the same model and everything.
They're rolled off the same assembly line. They're different.
That's right.
You know, you don't think about that, but when you start considering all the way the tension of the levers and the everything, it is. And, you know, you said Eddie Lawson. Think about this. When those guys are racing around a track at 200 miles an hour, they put on new meat.
Yep.
It handles differently than what they just came off with.
Yep.
And now they know this, but even so, every time they get back on and they hit that thing, they got brand new meat on there, and it grips a heck of a lot more differently than it has when it's been worn down a little bit. So even then, that first lap, they're probably okay until they, you know, till they really ride it in and they break it in on the track.
Well, I always thought that there are certain things that you can do that it would feel like, at least, that it would make it less dangerous. For instance, when I go from a Dunlop, which I bought the motorcycle, to the Metzlers, which have so much more grip, I always felt like, okay, I'm far more stable, I'm safer. Yeah, but now all of a sudden it's going to want to turn right into the freaking center and hit the little divider or whatever.
Right.
Because it's not turning the way it was.
That's right.
So until I get used to it, I mean, when I get used to it, which doesn't take long, I love it because now I've got that stability I wanted. But if I just go on autopilot and drive it like I had a Dunlop, I'm probably going to do something similar. Well, guys, that's our music. We've got one more segment coming up, and we'll be back in just a moment.
What comes to your mind when you think about motorcycle riders? The first picture that comes to my mind is a road warrior. A road warrior is someone who has a passion for life and adventure, who willingly pits themselves against Mother Nature and the dangers of the road, all for a chance to see the world from the seat of a two-wheeled iron steed. A road warrior must approach biking in the same manner as a good soldier, because just like your military counterparts, you will always face plenty of real and potentially dangerous situations every time you're on the road. These include bad weather, animals, road conditions, pedestrians, and other vehicles that share the road with you. I suggest we apply the soldier's way of life to our riding experience by following these few simple rules. 1. Get basic training. 2. Get to know your equipment. 3. Keep your equipment in good running order. 4. Be prepared. Like the good soldier who carries his 50-pound pack, it's a good idea to carry proper riding gear, tools, and other essentials, including a cell phone, credit card, and at least $5 cash. 5. Just as a good soldier follows instructions given to him by his superiors, we need to follow our instructions too. Know the law and follow it. By doing this, you are less likely to encounter traffic tickets, higher insurance rates, and possible impoundment of your bike. 6. And lastly, keep a cool head. A trained soldier always keeps his cool, no matter what is coming at him. You can't think clearly when you're angry. And speaking of clear thinking, a good soldier would never face the enemy under the influence of drugs and alcohol, and neither should you. Ride sober. So to all of you, fellow road warriors, God bless, ride safe, and we'll see you out on the road.
When you want the latest news and information related to the Canadian motorcycling scene, then turn to BeltDriveBetty.com, your trusted source for all things motorcycling. BeltDriveBetty.com, serving the Canadian motorcycling scene since 2003.
Well,
welcome back to the fifth and final segment of the show. We start things off with rallies and runs, where we briefly cover tours, rides, events, and more. Walt, tell us what's going on.
Well, we've been telling you about the Ride to the Quail, and that's May 3rd to the 5th, and it's just about filled up. May 11th and 20th is Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, Myrtle Beach Bike Week. And from what they're saying, everybody's in accord with this. The government and everybody's good. Thinking, okay, this is a good thing. Two things I wanted to tell you about was on July 14th in Linwood here, if you're in the Puget Sound area, is Dragon's Last Ride. It starts at Emerald City Harley-Davidson. Sign in at 9 and kickstand up at 10. You can go to www.dragonslastride.org to find out about it. And they always have a fundraiser at the Red Onion in Mount Lake Terrace.
Mm-hmm.
And that happens on May 22nd from 5 to 8. They have like 25% of the profits and all of the non-credit card tips. If you put money in the thing, all of that goes to Dragon's Last Ride. So, and once again, Red Onion is some good munchies. So yep. You might want to remember to go over there.
And what awesome. Do we got this week's trivia? Because we didn't deal with it last week. And
The suspense must be just tearing everybody up about what GSXR means, right?
Yes.
So 2 weeks ago, that was our question. What does GSXR stand for in Suzuki's GSXR line of motorcycles? Any guesses, guys?
Great sizzling excitement.
Pretty close. Grand Sport Experimental Racing.
Oh!
Ah, there you go, right? All right, so we're going to stick with the theme here. We're going to go with some more motorcycle letters. What do the letters CB in Honda's CB line of motorcycles stand for? Why do they call them CBs?
Yeah, don't say it. Don't say anything, Walt, maybe.
But it has nothing to do with the Navy, let me assure you.
And it has nothing to do with radios either.
Right.
Both true.
But I tell you what, it was when they came out, I think it was the tail end of the C.B. McCall and all those guys. What was it?
C.W. McCall.
C.W. McCall and all that.
Raker
convoy.
Nine.
Convoy. We got a convoy. Boom, boom. Yep. That was back in the day of Wildwood Weed and I don't like spiders and snakes, and that ain't what it takes to love me. And Jim Stafford songs were big. That was back in the day when novelty songs were played on the radio. And it was a different time, the early 70s.
Yep.
And, you know, people always, I'm on YouTube watching that.
I had a CB in my Mustang that we had.
Oh, yeah.
And so I would get on and I'd be talking to people. And they always, I actually have been in more than one convoy, but they always wanted me to be at the very front. So that I could get up there, and if anybody's going to get stopped, it's going to be me. So
nice.
You are the, what do they call that?
You are the rabbit.
You are the rabbit. That's right.
Yep.
Well, those are good times. So, folks, contact us at worldofmotorcycling.com. I know you're listening, so please, we would love to know what CB stands for. And, hey, when do they first start using it? Might be another one. So, geez, there's our music already.
Well, that about wraps it all up for this week. Make sure to share us with your friends and let us know how we're doing. And remember, keep the chrome side up and the rubber side down, and we'll see you out on the road.